You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 69. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. Just going to wait for the immature jokes. Okay, all done. thanks for joining me today. I've got an interesting interview. You know, you may have heard or seen in the kind of skeptic news circles this story of a group in Malaysia that was part of the Atheist Republic Facebook group, but like a local Kuala Lumpur chapter of it. There was a picture of a gathering that got leaked and kind of went viral. And then Malaysian officials, people in the government, all kinds of people in Malaysia were calling for essentially violence and imprisonment and other all kinds of terrible things just for these people having gathered under sort of an atheist banner. Now, this is interesting because an old friend of the show, an old friend of mine named Adrian, who I spoke to a long time ago on the show, back when it was Atheistically Speaking, was actually in Malaysia and was actually a member of this group. Now, he wasn't actually there because he happened to be traveling during when this meeting was, but he was in the group, he was going to go, and then the date got changed. So this is a really interesting opportunity to get a look into what was going on there. He's going to explain the situation in Malaysia, the group, what happened, kind of the fallout. So really interesting stuff. I'm really glad he reached out. So here he is. Here's Adrian. Hey, Adrian, thanks for coming on the show. Now, we talked a while back, right? Back in the Atheistically Speaking days?
Yeah, back in the old days.
Yeah, it has been a long time. So if you don't mind, remind us who you are, and we'll talk about a little bit about why you're here in a minute.
Well, thank you so much for bringing me on after I reached out to you and brought this up. But my main background is I was a teacher in Korea, and I found out about your show. And I've been a patron and listening to the show since 2014. And I'm pretty outspoken atheist. And in 2015, I moved to Malaysia and I became a teacher there. And as time went on, I came across a group, a Facebook group, which is run by the Atheist Republic. And they have these networks and Facebook groups that are very closed and private. And the admins there, they basically vet us and they ask very specific questions about who we are. And the group that is right now, from what I remember, it's the Atheist Republic Kuala Lumpur. So from there, one of the big news outlets that kind of caught on was it came about basically when there was a meeting, a kind of group meeting with no motivation to do anything really, just kind of to gather.
Just a meetup.
The meeting was supposed to be kind of like a private get together so people in the group could actually meet one another. So
this is a group of presumably mostly ex-Muslims, right?
Actually, it's not just ex-Muslims because Malaysia is a very diverse country. They have Chinese, they have Indian, and they have Malays. So Malays are by birth must identify as Muslim.
Hmm.
So in the group, there are Malays and who identify as ex-Muslim. And when the meeting was organized, it was meant to be just kind of a gathering. So you didn't even have to identify as ex-Muslim to be in the gathering.
Okay.
It was organized
through the Atheist Republic group that was local to that area.
Yeah. Okay. And, the people in the page that know one another, right? So, we talked with each other and we organized a meeting to have fun, relax, talk to each other, maybe share a drink. So there's nothing actually on the surface that's wrong about it, right?
We're not, nobody
in the group is actually breaking any specific laws, and they're legally, they identify as Muslim. The tricky thing in Malaysia is, we talked about this last time I was on the show, but for those who didn't have a chance to listen to that, Malaysia is a very complicated government, because for non-Muslims, which means non-Malays, they have the civil courts, which is a secular legal system. Mm. But for those who are Malays and who are Muslim, they have to adhere to Sharia law when it comes to divorce, religion, private matters, right? So even when it comes to religious offenses, it's dealt through the Sharia courts.
Oh.
But it's even more complicated because, you know, just like you have state laws, you also have state Sharia law. So in each of the states, there's a basically a sultan or a king figurehead, and then you have the advisors, the religious advisors, which identify as muftis. So like they're the religious advisors to the king, and the king can pardon any religious offense, but each state has their own rules and legality to the extent that they can carry out laws. So this event took place in Kuala Lumpur, and there are actually no legal obstructions that were had. So like if you identify as ex-Muslim, there aren't any strict apostasy laws. But given that the government is quite corrupt and they can find ways to navigate the political system, they can bust you on these kinds of things. So the way that this story kind of exploded out into the media was there was the kind of group gathering, which was kind of, imagine you call a bunch of friends and, you know, let's meet at a bar, let's meet at a restaurant or whatever. And people are drinking, socializing. Nothing is wrong. Nothing that's happening is actually illegal. But they posted a photo, and what happened was that photo became public through the Atheist Republic page. And the Atheist Republic page is a massive page, which is actually public. But our page was a private page, and the picture was put on our private page, and it managed to get leaked out. And when it got leaked out, a very pro-Islamist blog picked it up, and then they wrote about it, and then the local news picked up on it and made a story about it, saying that, you know, this is an atheist gathering, and kind of escalated where you had government officials saying that atheists need to be tracked down and hunted, and that this is a problem of not enough education and not enough Islamic education. The only tricky thing is there's nothing in the federal territories, which is what Kuala Lumpur represents. They don't have a king. They don't have anyone like that. So they just have the main constitutional law, which is the civil courts. And then you have Sharia law, which deals with like all matters pertaining to religion. So it's kind of tricky in this circumstance, because the event took place in Kuala Lumpur. So there's nothing that actually took place that was illegal. It's just that there are ex-Muslims that might have been there, and they don't officially recognize themselves as ex-Muslim. So the government wants to track down these people. So they're going to say that these people need rehabilitation, and that they need to repent. And if they do find that person, maybe they might coerce them into repenting, or, you know, they might have to pay a fine, or they might even get public caning. Mm. So, for example, not a matter of religion, but there was a case not long ago where a model was caught drinking. She was Muslim, she was Malay, and she had to pay equivalent of like a few thousand dollars, and she got 6 public strokes of the cane, which is pretty standard.
So there's a lot to break down here. That's okay. Let's try to focus in on maybe the legal aspect and because that, I think there's that, and then there's what happened and what we should think about that. I'm just trying to break it all down, because I'm absolutely not familiar with Malaysia at all. except okay. from the last time we spoke 3 years ago or whatever. But I'm just curious, what legally makes someone Malay? Like, is it just, is it ethnicity? Is it what? Because if you're Malay, then you are a Muslim right. by definition, and you have a separate, you know, there's this Sharia law applies to you and all that. Like, what legally is the standard there?
You have to have a parent, at least by birth. So you need to, you have to have parents that would be identified as Malay, and all it takes is one of the parents to be Malay. Hmm. Because if you are Malay and you're married, both people must be legally identified as Muslim by law. Because on your ID card, right, that you carry around, it says there that you are Muslim by birth. And there's nothing you can do to change that.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was going to ask. You're forced into that. And then it also sounds like, yeah. so you can't marry a non-Muslim if you're a Muslim there?
You can, but you have to convert.
Oh. I'm just laughing because it's like, yeah, you can marry a non-Muslim as long as they're a Muslim. It's kind of what you're saying.
it's kind of tricky, especially if you marry, like, let's say if I was born in Malaysia and I was a Malaysian citizen, and then I marry a Muslim who's not Malaysian, right?
Okay.
And they're not, and they are Muslim, I have to convert. But
wait,
the
you
opportunity
have to
is,
sorry,
I can,
what are you converting to?
So if I, let's say I was born into a Christian family.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
I'm Christian Chinese or Buddhist Chinese or what, or whichever, or Hindu. And I meet someone who's Muslim,
okay,
and they're not Malaysian. Hmm. I have to still convert for my marriage to be legally recognized.
Right.
It doesn't apply to every other group. So if you are Hindu, Buddhist, Christian, right, you can be, your marriage is a civil marriage, right? So hmm. you fall under the secular law. But if you are Malaysian, but you're not Muslim, your marriage is legally defined as a civil marriage.
Okay.
And has to be. But when you involve Muslims, you have to convert. Especially if you are Malay and you marry to someone else, that person has to, because their marriage will not be recognized. And because matters of marriage are a religious matter, right, for Muslims, they follow the Sharia law.
Okay. So, and it sounds like you don't have a choice if you're born in Malaysia and you're a Muslim. I mean, you just are, that's your religion, and you're not allowed to leave, right? Are you allowed to, are you just stuck forever? You have to identify as Muslim, otherwise you're breaking some laws?
It's, and the thing is, yeah, and it depends on a state-to-state level. So, there are very strict interpretations in this. So there are very conservative states in Malaysia. And one of the states is run by a very strong Islamist group. And they have a law called, or they wanted to enact a law called Hudud Law, which is basically the kind of law that you would find in Saudi Arabia. So if you are caught stealing, you can have your arms cut off.
Wow.
If you apostatize, you can actually be sentenced to death. But there's a very kind of
are there any liberal states that aren't quite as bad, or is it all pretty much?
There are more liberal states. I mean, if you live in KL, they follow a stronger the federal law, so they don't have these really strict Sharia laws for apostasy. But it's kind of a, you have to apply for it. Like, if you want to do it legally, you can renounce Islam, right? The penalty for that, which actually no one has formally done it in Malaysia. No one has actually formally renounced Islam that's Malay.
Oh, they just don't do it.
They don't do it.
Okay.
And, you know, from there, sometimes there's mistaken identity. So if, you know, you claim that you're not Muslim and, you know, there is a mistake with your name and you're actually Christian and you're born that way and your whole family, then they accept that, right? Hmm. Sometimes what happens is if you convert for the purposes of marriage, right, when you were not Muslim before, they give you an opportunity to revert back.
Oh, interesting.
The example I gave you, so if I'm Chinese and I marry a man who's Muslim but is not Malaysian, I'm forced to convert, and then let's say we get a divorce, and I want to.
Is that allowed though? You're allowed to get a divorce in a Muslim marriage?
You are, even between Malays. Like Malays can file for divorce, but there are a lot more technical aspects that I don't really know the details of too much.
Okay, so there's probably has to fulfill some sort of requirements.
Yeah, there are criterias, right? The interesting thing is if you're an apostate, right, what they do is they give you an opportunity to find out, are you actually of sane mind? Are you cognitively functioning properly? That are you not doing this because maybe you have a mental illness, right? Yeah. And they give you an opportunity to repent. So if you repent, they can either reject it or allow it depending on sincerity and evidence and all this information, right?
Okay.
What is tricky is if you're completely unrepentant, they follow through and they give you a chance to have rehabilitation. And after the rehabilitation, if you go to an imam or a religious leader for counseling to try to convince you, and if you are still unrepentant, then it can be very nasty depending on the circumstance of what state you live in. So I can give you a name of a state. For example, there's a state in Malaysia called Kelantan, right? It's northern Malaysia, and it's the province or state that I told you that is run by the Islamist group. Mm. So the punishment in Kelantan for apostasy is you either get 36 months detention in a rehabilitation center, and if still you don't repent, you get the death sentence and you have to forfeit all property that you have.
It sounds like what you're saying is this just doesn't happen often because people, it's just not worth it. Nobody does.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of cases so far have been next to nothing, but there has been a very interesting case in the Supreme Court where a Malay woman, she converted to Christianity. And she fought very hard to go to the highest levels of the Supreme Court. Her name is actually Lena Joy. So what she did is she was Muslim and she converted to Christianity.
And that's not allowed, right?
Technically, it's not allowed. But what she wanted to fight for more than anything else was for her ID tag. Because when you are given your identification,
it says you're Muslim if you're Malay.
Yeah, it says you're Muslim. And she was fighting to get that removed. So what the court granted her was the opportunity to keep or change her name because she was born with a Malaysian name, or sorry, a Muslim name. And they only granted her the opportunity to change that name.
Hmm.
And that was it. That was the most that they could grant for her. But they allowed her, they did not formally recognize her conversion.
Okay. So she would still be subject to Sharia law and all that stuff.
Yeah. The thing is, because she went to the federal court, the federal Sharia court, she did not suffer penalties because I guess they offered her the chance to keep her religion, but only change her name, or not keep her religion, sorry, keep her original religion without consequence, right? But for it not to be formally recognized in any way. It's just tricky when you live in the country because everything you do is subject to Sharia law on a personal level. So like if it's Ramadan, right? Are you familiar with Ramadan?
A little bit. Fasting and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, it's a legal thing in Malaysia. So if you are caught eating during fasting, the fasting time, you can be penalized.
Hmm.
They can fine you. You may also be potentially caned for it, depending on the severity of it and your repentance towards it. So it gets kind of tricky in this kind of circumstance because this all started from a Facebook group. And
yeah. And now, I wanted to clarify too, because now let's talk about how the law applies in Kuala Lumpur. Is that a weird situation because it's a capital, kind of like Washington, D.C., where it has some, like it's not, is that why you said it's under federal law?
Yep.
Or, okay.
Yeah. It's a federal territory. It doesn't have its own state
right,
laws.
Right.
So there's a federal administration of Sharia law, but the apostasy, there aren't any severe punishments for it.
So if you live there, you can kind of, you're a little more free, I guess, as a Muslim than other states. Okay, interesting.
But I mean, that's definitely, relatively speaking, because given the way that the government does function, they can try to spin it in a way where they might accuse you of doing some other crime that they might punish you on a federal level, or try to say that like you're acting immoral or you're countering this vice. So even if they can't get you the highest level of punishment, they'll still try to bust people on it, on any technicality that they can find.
Okay.
And it's pretty scary because there are government officials who are representing at the highest level who are saying that like these atheist groups and individuals in the group need to be targeted, hunted down, brought to justice, and find the way again. Because they've been led astray by, you know, corrupt Western secular liberal values. That's how the media has spun it in Malaysia, especially the very conservative Malay media.
Okay, and so in this backdrop, then the meeting that happened was in Kuala Lumpur, right?
It was in Kuala Lumpur.
Okay, so a picture was taken. It was just a meetup, having drinks, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you just socialize, get together, you know.
Wait, hold on, sorry, but is drinking illegal for Muslims there or
yes.
No?
Yes.
Oh, yep. It is, okay.
But the thing is, they can't prove that even if the person was there, they can't say that there's no evidence for them to say that you were drinking alcohol unless you had a religious police there, right, who could actually demonstrate that.
Okay, so that's not that much of a concern in this, or like are they more worried about just being associated with atheists and the implications of that?
Yeah, and okay. You know, maybe monitoring what the person might have said in the group and try to find out, you know, does this person actually identify as non-Muslim? Because then like I explained, the whole apostasy becomes kind of tricky and problematic.
Right.
And also on a personal level, because, you know, some of these people have families and they have to be living a double life at times. There are people from all different backgrounds. So Chinese, Indian, Muslim, some are vocal, some are less vocal. Some even are not Malaysians and they're from Arab countries and they identify, and sometimes they post like, oh, what should I say? What should I do if I'm eating or drinking and it's not halal? Am I going to be in trouble? Or what are the, you know, and there are people there to kind of tell them and help them to kind of navigate what they can get away with and what they can't, and that they should be mindful and careful because it's.
So, it's kind of a support group, right? I mean,
that's exactly what it is.
The realities of. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you would find with any group that on Facebook that's a closed, private atheist group. And, you know, doesn't mean that you have to agree with what everyone says there. People argue back and forth. But, you know, some people post some pretty personal stuff about their lives and their concerns with how are they supposed to teach their children who go to like Islamic schools when they don't believe anymore. It's very tough because they have to go to the mosque and pray. There are people there who monitor and watch and make sure that people go and pray on a regular basis. And if you don't do that, you know, family members get suspicious and they could report you.
Yeah.
They could report you to the religious police and, you know, then you get investigated, you're questioned and you're asked. But they don't serve even the religious police don't serve as actual civil servants of the government, so they can't actually arrest. But what ends up happening is they can call the police and say, well, this person has been behaving this and this way. And because the police is a very corrupt system in Malaysia, if you thought America's policing was bad, Malaysia's is on another level,
right,
in terms of, you know, corruption. And they're basically government thugs. They will arrest you. They'll take bribes. If they don't like you, if they think that you're being counter to the government, they very easily and quickly have you arrested, and you don't hear from that person anymore.
So I don't know if you said this in the beginning, but you were in this Facebook group, but you weren't at this particular event, right?
Yeah, I actually missed out on it because I had to leave to go back to Canada. So I initially had planned to go and meet some of these people because I was interested in talking to them and knowing how it is to live this kind of life and how they feel about the religion and politics in the country. And it got moved to a day that I was not around, but I'm still in the group. I'm still keeping contact in the group, and people are actually supporting one another. It's been kind of a moment where it's united a lot of us in the group, but it's also made a lot of people scared. Like, oh
yeah. Talk about the reaction of what happened when this was, do you think it was maliciously leaked out to the press or?
Yeah, because the group that posted it in the Malay language is a very kind of pro-Islamist group, and they often post credible looking articles in English. And then when you read the Malay, they're very slanderous, right? They're making it seem like, oh, we're a bunch of like Jew loving Freemason, very conspiratorial, you know, like borderline Illuminati kind of nonsense. That we're these immoral people who are causing these Malays to be led astray, and that these secular Western values are brainwashing these Muslims, and that, you know, we should be very careful and wary about groups like this, and that they don't belong in Malaysia. Because one of the things that you have to do when you're a Malaysian citizen, which goes back to the law, you have to be a citizen, you have to acknowledge the existence of a God, and it doesn't matter what. It's part of the pledge.
Okay, and so this is even no matter who you are, no matter if you're born there or not.
Yeah,
you have to acknowledge. How does that work? Forgive my ignorance, but how does that work with Buddhists?
Well, because Buddhism is a very flexible kind of religion, I think people can
it just counts. They're just like, okay, that counts.
Yeah.
Okay. Close enough, is that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's like, well, you're a religion. And the thing is, in the constitution, the government has been trying to spin it as these are not patriots of Malaysia. These are people who are looking to cause trouble and to stir things up. Because look, see, the Malaysian constitution doesn't even recognize atheism, which in fact it doesn't. Because you have to acknowledge in the pledge as a citizen that one of the key tenets is a belief in God.
A belief in God, but you're saying Buddhists kind of get by with that, like that counts.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And you know, it's actually not long ago, you had I think it was Rashid, he was the Ahmadi, right?
Yeah.
In Malaysia, they clamp down and they're very hardline, and they say that these groups are not recognized as Muslims.
Oh, Ahmadi Muslims don't count as Muslims?
Nope.
Yeah.
Not even Shia Muslims count.
Oh, okay.
So they're not even recognized as Muslims. So it becomes even trickier in how do you legally distinguish them, because they're a minority and they live in Malaysia, but they have to, I guess, live a secret double life, and
do they have to pretend and just kind of go along with the Sunni tradition
on a surface level? Yeah. But privately, no. And when these groups have tried to build mosques, the government had flat out said no. Wow. And funny enough, they counted liberalism and pluralism as one of the deviant ideologies in Malaysia.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's a spiraling in terms of conservatism and hard line. It's been getting progressively worse in Malaysia. I mean, before the 70s, you did not have this kind of these legalities and the kind of strong religious conservatism. 40 years ago, you would barely see a woman even wear a headscarf. or a hijab.
That's so weird. Yeah. Why is that seems to be the case in a lot of places. I wonder why that is.
They want to go back to the original, the pure Islam. So to them, they see it as it's the Quran, it's the Hadith, and all these other legal or not, scholarly interpretations, they're a distraction. Because formally, the Islamic school of thought in Malaysia is called the Shafi, which doesn't recognize past legal precedent and interpretation for laws. So they go directly to the Quran, they go directly to the Hadiths, and then they interpret that from a legal point of view. So they've been kind of steering the country towards a more strict, conservative, kind of shadowing in a way and looking up to Saudi Arabia and the more conservative Arab countries as examples. Because in Malaysian society, what's becoming more and more common and prevalent is even women wearing niqabs. And that is not a thing that was that you would find in Malaysia even 10, 15 years ago. More and more women in conservative areas are wearing niqabs.
That's really interesting.
The province that, or the state that I told you about where death, one of them that where death is a punishment for apostasy, they have gender segregated areas that you go, like the theaters or the bus. I don't know how strict they enact it, but it's there and you can be punished for it.
So back to the group then. So when this happened, what were the kind of things people were saying in the group? Did people leave the group? Were people really scared? Are they still scared?
It's a mix. There are people in the group that are scared. And I think there's a potential that some of them may be investigated even, because some of the people in the group have maybe family members or people that they know that work for the religious police or are entrenched in the government. So it wouldn't surprise me if they've been investigated. Like what the group has been trying to do is keep a very low profile for now, because recently what happened was the same group that wrote about us, our page and the meeting, they are trying to go into people's Facebook page, find as many personal details that they can find and just post it. So I have an article where my name is mentioned, but I could tell that all the information that they got was directly from my Facebook page. So they went in and they wrote where I worked in Malaysia. They wrote my ethnicity, my background, and they took my post and they translated my post and what I said, that I'm trying to suppress government control of people's religion in Malaysia. And, you know, they're trying to spin it in a way to make it look like we're these kind of rebellious political activists, right?
So they view you, because you're a visitor there, right?
Yeah.
So they view you as, even though you're not under the legal requirements of, you know, Malay people or anybody who is like a registered Muslim there, even though you're not under those requirements, is it a sort of xenophobic thing of look at these outsiders, you know, stirring up religious rebellion kind of thing?
They care. It's less about xenophobia and more about fear of their religion being challenged.
Okay.
So they kind of see me, look at this Westerner who's reaching out to the international community and trying to get this out in the public, and who's trying to slander our religion here, bringing in Western values and secularism and all of this. And they write it like this is a negative thing, and that this is cancerous to the foundation of Islam in Malaysia. I mean, if you have the prime minister who openly has said in the past that, you know, one of the problems of Malaysia and Muslims that are the biggest, one of the biggest problems they're facing is secularism in the country and more liberalism. It's a problem. And they view it as, you know, a seditious act that you're, you know, going against the values and the foundations of Malaysian the Malaysian political system and the government.
Are you going back or are you back?
I'm currently in Canada right now. And I mean, I wanted to keep a little, I got a little bit scared because they went on my profile and got my information. And so for now, you know, keeping a low a little bit, but I do plan on staying in Canada for a prolonged period of time. It was just that I did get a little bit scared because my girlfriend is Malaysian and we had to both remove as much public detail about ourselves online because there have been cases where people have posted things against Islam and, you know, next thing you know, they're being investigated because they posted something on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry, I didn't want to. I wasn't sure what your situation was. So I can cut all that if you want.
No. Okay. I think it's important that, you know, people know that. And I'm okay sticking out my neck in this. It's just that it's what I am happy is this got a lot of press internationally. Like, you know, you had, you know, ex-Muslims in Canada. I mean, Ali Rizvi, Majid Nawaz, Richard Dawkins even posted about it. It's out on Friendly Atheist. The BBC actually interviewed one of the members in our group under a pseudonym, right? So I think that this needs to be known as much as possible, but we just have to be very diligent and careful in the group about not giving too many specific details, because if we give out any details that might be used against us, that it might pin someone down in the group, right?
Yeah.
There are people there in the group that we're worried about might be potentially investigated, and we don't want to give anything to any of the authorities that might be used against them. Because on a legal level, like that, going back to the beginning, nobody did anything wrong. Yeah. It's just that they're trying to find that this was an atheist meeting and that the Malays that are there must be atheist as well. And we're going to try to get them. And we're going to try to make sure that, you know, this is not, they're not spreading vice and they're not spreading immorality or anything like that.
So are the actual repercussions you're worried about, or the group is worried about, they're all from the government, or are they also worried? Has there been any history of violence against atheists or ex-Muslims on the part of just citizens?
The problem with it is it's a very messy landscape, and people don't publicly identify as atheists who haven't been Muslim before in Malaysia. So like if you have any outspoken atheists, they're usually Chinese or Indian, but they're also vocal activists on a political level. So when they criticize the government, there have been cases where people have been suddenly arrested because they might have led a rally, or they might have led a anti-corrupt march or something like that. So it's less, there's less about the fear on a public level of us. It's more about what might happen to those people in their personal lives. And there may be instances where they might suffer violence that might not be reported, but through the media is very quiet about atheists in Malaysia. And this event actually has brought out the conversation, which is probably a positive thing, because you don't get to hear about atheists, you don't get to hear about these groups in Malaysia. You always hear about problems between Hindu families and Christian families and Buddhist families, and like the messy complications that might happen when there's divorce, and you know, who gets to claim what religion. But as a whole, like as long as you claim a religion, you're better off than if you don't claim any religion in Malaysia as an official status, right? The media doesn't do much. It's very controlled by the government, and any loud, outspoken media voices are usually shut down or blocked. Like when I was in Malaysia, a lot of atheist websites I was noticing were slowly and progressively being blocked or censored. Patheos, Friendly Atheist, blocked, censored. So the only way to bypass that is, you know, you go on VPNs.
Wow.
So it's a bit tricky to answer that question, because it's just there isn't a conversation about atheism on a on a national level, because people would view them as immoral and problem to the government, that, you know, they could be devil worshippers, or they're Satanists, or, you know, they're trying to lead Muslims astray. And the government just seems to always be afraid that the people are going to lose their religion, and they're going to stray away.
Yeah, this is always a good way to stay in power. Like, it's any, you know, like, that's this, we see the same thing with Trump in America, like having a victim mentality and promoting a hatred of any other group or a fear of any other group is a good way to get people motivated and to stay in power. It seems like, is this sort of the same thing going on over there, do you think?
Absolutely. And the hilarious thing about it all is they're the majority. I mean, it's about a 69-70% majority in the country, and they have all of the rights and privileges on every level. The government subsidizes their religion. The government subsidizes building mosques, sending people overseas to Mecca to do the pilgrimage to Saudi Arabia. The government favors Islam as the main religion in the country, and that everyone else should just shut up and follow. And if you don't like it, then you should leave.
Yeah.
So, and they always cry victim, that everyone is trying to undermine their religion. They're trying to undermine their hegemony, their control of the country. So they love the victim mentality, because they get to, you know, go show what's happening in the West and say, look at how much they hate us. Look how much they hate our religion. We give power to these people in our country. This is what's going to happen. So they love playing that card.
Yeah. Anytime you've got immense privilege in a country, and whoever you are, I think any erosion of that looks like an attack. I think it's a pretty common theme. Like, if the Muslim majority seems to be in an immense place of privilege in Malaysia, they don't want to lose any bit of that.
On every level. I mean, if you have a law that says the only ethnic group that's allowed to be the head of the state can only be Malay and can only be Muslim, that demonstrates a huge thing. You can't be prime minister if you're not Malay, if you're not Muslim. That's right. It. You can't be prime minister of the country. You can't be head of state. It's in the law. It was always meant to be. They always claim that they were the original people, and that the religion was always the main religion in the country. So therefore, they should be the ones ruling it.
Yeah.
I feel really privileged to be able to speak about this, given that, you know, the mess that's going on in the news recently with Donald Trump and everything. But I think it's very important, because there are people in the group who risk a lot. They risk their lives, their reputations, their families, everything, to go on the group and to just share some opinions. And, you know, like, that no one in the group did anything wrong. Like, even if they didn't identify as atheists, they would still be welcome. Like, if they were uncomfortable with identifying as that, you know, it was a meeting, it was a gathering. And I just want people to know, who are, you know, hearing the story, that the group so far has been the strongest in terms of we're having each other's backs, and that we're stronger than it was before. Much more. People are trying to help out one another. We're trying to keep as much anonymity. We're trying to talk and help out one another. You know, if someone needs help with this and that, there people are offering as much help as possible. They're offering legal help. They're trying to find lawyers that might do this pro bono without getting paid, to try to defend their rights if they get arrested, or if they're taken to the courts. So there are people there that would offer their services, and I think that this has actually helped bring out the lack of conversation in Malaysia, because religion is very stable and the quote unquote peaceful, because everyone is just told you know, to shut up and be in their place and don't question the authority, and everything will be okay.
Right. And when you get to control everything and just be, and no one really questions it, then yeah, sure. Things are great for that majority group. Yeah. Huh?
And I think that this has now internationally put the spotlight on Malaysia to show that moderate Islam in a country that's supposed to be a very progressive and modern country is not. And yeah, we should be looking at helping and supporting those and making it more, pressuring governments as much as possible, whether it's like journalists or to call this out, that even when you live in a, you know, progressive country like Malaysia, you know, relatively speaking, that the core problem in this that extends even politically is the religiosity in the country. Yeah. And the dominance of Islam in the country that has eroded a lot of the secular strongholds that's been in the country, and it's not getting better. But if this is public, and it has been, which is good, it might actually make things better, which I just wanted people to know that if there's any way that you could support or, you know, lend a hand to an ex-Muslim or anything like that, that this is, people should know about it. And, you know, I'm just really happy and thankful that, you know, you gave me this opportunity to come on here and share that, despite that it might not be current hot topic on the news. But
No problem. I'm really interested to hear about it. Thanks for coming on and explaining it. And is there anything specifically that we can do other than just trying to raise awareness?
Because of the difficulty of the situation, and it's a very legal specific thing. If there are groups, I don't know, groups in America that might provide potential asylum to those who might want to leave the country due to fear of being arrested or prosecuted, right? Like if you can help out on a legal level to give people asylum or to relocate people, and if there are ex-Muslims who need help, to lend a hand if you can, or give people resources, because I'm just a member in the group, right? And I don't have a lot of legal standing in Malaysia. I don't have a lot of power to do much. I just know that if I could get people aware of the situation, and if you have an opportunity to protect and give voice to those ex-Muslims in Malaysia, then to do so. I mean, that's the best thing that you can do. If it becomes more public, then it might put pressure on the government to not do anything like seriously dramatic, or they might just call off this whole thing, this whole investigation. But the Malaysian government is going to be very quiet about what it does from now on. So we are relying on a lot of people to share information more so than anything. So if you can get access to any legal information that might help people relocate if they need to relocate or leave the country, to provide it. Because I don't know myself too many of those resources. Like if it would have to be, you know, lawyers and government officials who care about this happening. Otherwise, it would just be suppressed, and, you know, people might get arrested and thrown in jail, or, you know, they lose their jobs without any consequence, and it would be looked at as like, this is a good thing that happened to these people, right? This is the just thing that happened to them. I'm just trying my best to let this be known to others that it's an important event that kind of happened to ex-Muslims and atheists in Malaysia, because we're a very silent minority, and nothing like to this scale has ever happened before. And I just want to make sure that the people that might suffer from it are as safe as possible, and nothing serious happens to them. That's the most that I could hope for. If you have any knowledge of any legal institutions that might file for political asylum or refugee status, to help out as much as possible, or offer your services.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on and explaining that to us. And hopefully we can, it is tough to compete with the Trump news cycle anywhere, really. Yeah. But I think it is very valuable to bring that perspective to the show. And, you know, there are a lot of places where it's just not easy to be an atheist. It's not easy to be a non-Muslim or a non-whatever. And thanks for breaking that down for us, Adrian. And let me know if there's any follow-up to this at any point. You know, keep in touch. Let's see how this goes. I hope that the government backs down. I hope that no one in the group suffers these consequences, but we'll have to keep an eye on it.
As much as I can update, I'll get, when I get a consent and approval from the members in the group about sharing any information, I'll let you know as soon as I can.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Adrian.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Adrian for taking us through all that. Very interesting to get a little departure from the US-centric news and talk about some other parts of the world for once. Sorry to all my non-American listeners for how American-centric this podcast is, but hey, that's where I live. And there's some stuff going down here. But this was a really interesting look into, as much as I don't by any means want to minimize the very real grievances in this country at all, there's other places that are worse. And it's interesting to hear what it's like to try to be an atheist in Malaysia right now. And there's many other places where it's even worse than that. But yeah, that's sort of a fake religious freedom they have there. I found it particularly funny, funny in a bad way, of course, but funny in a sort of a dark way. When I asked, well, can you marry a Muslim if you're a non-Muslim? And he said, Adrian says, yeah, sure, as long as you convert. It's just like, so no, you can't marry a Muslim if you're a non-Muslim. You have to convert. So stuff like that, that we take for granted in this country with our pretty robust religious freedom. It's interesting to learn that, you know, it could be worse other places. And then another thing that occurred to me is, this is a real opportunity to look at how humans in general just tend to act a certain way when they're the majority, and it's a challenge throughout the world. You know, this isn't some, when we talk about racial injustice in America, this isn't some uniquely white problem or uniquely American problem. I mean, anywhere, I believe, it's like when I was talking to Alex Jules, and I said, you know, humans are humans are humans, or he said, I don't know, one of us said that. And it I really do agree with it, though, if it was him. And of course I do if it was me. But I really do think that humans do this when they are a majority group somewhere, when they have power, political power, religious power. Any threat to that becomes, even though they have immense privilege, any threat to it is viewed as this attack. And people in power like that, no matter what the group is, it's not inherent to any one group. No matter what the group is, they're not able to see it in perspective. They just see it in terms of losing something they already have, and they crack down. And this scapegoating of minority groups is a very universal theme. And basically all I'm saying is, long story short, I mean, when people want to complain to me like, well, what about racism against white people? The answer is like, well, it's just not a huge problem in this country. It doesn't mean it couldn't be a problem in hypothetically some different society somewhere. Like it could be. There's nothing that makes white people inherently more racist than any other group of people. It's just history. I mean, it's just how history unfolded in this country. So I don't know. It's just something that occurred to me while I was listening to Adrian. So I want to thank you guys for listening as usual. That was really cool. I actually also did, by the way, I tried to hunt down to find a group or organization maybe that we could donate to help the situation. I'll be honest, I spent 10, 15 minutes Googling. I just wasn't finding anything. So if anybody out there knows of any group, charity, NGO, anything like that, that is working toward religious freedom in Malaysia or is working to provide any sort of asylum for people in Malaysia, let me know. Definitely email me. I wasn't able to find anything. I don't know if it's a question of it not existing or my not Googling properly, but I definitely put some effort into it and I wasn't able to come up with anything. So I wanted to do that and maybe present it in the show notes, but I wasn't able to find anything. So get back to me, anybody, if you happen to be able to find something. But other than that, unfortunately, there's not much we can do other than raise awareness of what's a pretty horrendous situation there, to just merely be a member of a group and to gather with other atheists, or not even necessarily atheists, and to be have government officials literally saying they want to hunt you down for that. I mean, that's pretty horrifying. So my thoughts definitely go out to the members of that group who are facing those challenges. And as soon as I hear of some way we can help, I will put it out to you guys. All right. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Adrian for getting on here and speaking out about it. And I will see you guys on Thursday.